Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this episode of our study of early professional football teams, we look at the origins of the All-America Football Conference, what it was, who thought of it, and the initial eight franchises as we start our journey through the history of the All-America Football Conference.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And in this episode, we are going to cover one of the great leagues that professional football not only lasted for four seasons, but what an impact it made on the game that we know of today. And that is the All-American Football Conference. In 1944, World War II was the news of the day. The stories of men lost, battles won, and the fight against evil filled the headlines in America's newspapers daily. Just a couple of days before the great D-Day invasion of continental Europe by the Allies, though, there were a group of men with large bank accounts that met in St. Louis, Missouri. This collective group of millionaires was called together by a sports visionary, a man we've talked about before in other segments, called Arch Ward. Now, Ward, if you remember, was a former sports writer and editor of the Chicago Tribune. This man had a thirst and a real talent for expanding the marketing of sports in America. The self-made promoter has a bunch of very popular ideas that came to fruition and are well known in the annals of American sports history. The Major League Baseball All-Star Game, the Chicago All-Star Football Game, which we talked quite a bit about here on Pigskin Dispatch, Golden Gloves Boxing Tournament, and he also founded countless charity events around Chicagoland. And also, he is the main founder of the AAFC. Now, Arch was so popular and organized that he was even offered the position of the National Football League commissioner twice, but he turned it down on both occasions. The promoter gathered these affluent individuals together near the gateway to the West to further discuss an idea he had of creating an alternative professional football league to compete with the National Football League. Ward figured that when the war would end, that there would be a large, talented pool of potential gridiron players who had competed not only on a battlefield, but on the gridiron as well. You remember, there were so many different football teams from every camp around the United States and fort and overseas, and platoons would play against platoons. So there was a lot of organized football in the military during World War II. Now, these players had played beside former pros and collegians alike, and when iron has sharpened iron like no other time in sports history or in football history. Other servicemen returning home would be primed for watching sports, as it was one of the few activities they had during their own downtime overseas. You know, a great football game on base when you're overseas, who's not going to stop and go and watch that when you have a little bit of time to kill? The demographic that Arch Ward targeted was getting primed and would be ready to go, he felt, as soon as the war ended. Now, the Professional Football Research Association published a great story in their publication, The Coffin Corner, back in 1980, and it had a piece written by Stan Grosshandler on the history of the AAFC. And I encourage you to take a look at it, and there's a great link on both the show notes of this podcast and on Pigskin Dispatch for this AAFC introduction article that we have here. And also, I'm going to take the time, as well as you're going to the professional football researchers pfra.org. You can join the PFRA. That's only about $35 a year, and you get in touch with some great football history and some of the greatest football minds and historians of our time. And you also get that great subscription to the Coffin Corner, which is a major influence and research reference point that I'm using for this article today. So the PFRA at professionalresearchers.org. But in attendance at the St. Louis meeting were potential franchisee representatives from New York, Los Angeles, Buffalo, San Francisco, Chicago, and some interest by proxy from the city of Cleveland. The Grosshandler shares with us the following from his 1980 article. A second organizational meeting on September 3, 1944 in Chicago, where John Keeshan, a trucking executive, represented Chicago. Oilmen James Brill and Ray Ryan were from Buffalo and New York, respectively. Boxer Gene Tunney sought a team for Baltimore. Actor Don Ameche wanted one for L.A. And Tony Morabito, a lumber executive, was from San Francisco. As well as Arthur McBride, a Cleveland taxi man, came from that city. Also present was Mrs. Eleanor Gehrig, widow of the Baseball Hall of Famer who later became a league executive. And it was reported that Detroit, Philadelphia, and Boston were also interested in the new league. Well, the AAFC was intriguing and now had the financial support from folks with wealth and also some sports prowess that wanted to become franchise owners. The group signed contracts and stipulated that under no circumstance was any franchise to sign on players, coaches, or executives that were still under contract with an NFL club or still had NCAA eligibility. They wanted to be on the up and up with no shady tactics that would smear the reputation or validity they sought. The vision was that they could gain a relationship with the established NFL and the NCAA and possibly have a World Series of football that matched the best from each league, much like Major League Baseball had done so brilliantly in the game of baseball. Now, the year of 1945 saw some obstacles arise that needed to be handled by the fledgling league. The original Baltimore contingent withdrew their seat of fielding a team. Cleveland signed Paul Brown on as their coach, even though he was still serving in the Navy, as influential people from Notre Dame had asked that Frank Leahy be taken off the table so that he could remain at the helm of the Fighting Irish. Ward, who was a South Bend alum, granted the wish, and that's one reason that Brown was recruited to fill the void of their first choice in Cleveland of Leahy as coach. And what a fortunate series of events that was for the future Browns organization. They even had the NFL's former Brooklyn franchise defect from the Senior League to come and join the AAFC to have a second team to take a foothold in the Big Apple area. The AAFC would be putting big-time professional football on the map west of the Mississippi, too, something that even the NFL was just trying to attempt there in 1945-1946. Everything was coming together, and in January 1946, the league had its franchises all ready to go with owners, coaches, and home venues. And they went together like this. On the east, they would have a great division. The New York Yankees, with Dan Topping as the owner, Ray Flaherty as coach, while playing their home games at Yankee Stadium. The Buffalo Bisons, owned by James Brill, head coach Sam Cordovano, and a contract to play at the Civic Stadium in Buffalo. The Brooklyn Dodgers, led by franchise owner Bill Cox, Mal Stevens was in charge of the sidelines, and a home venue at Ebbets Field. The Miami Seahawks, owned by Harvey Hester, coached by Jack Meagher, in the home setting of the Orange Bowl. So some truly historic venues there in the East. In the Western Conference, they had some great coaches and owners and places to play as well. Their four teams, the San Francisco 49ers, owned by Terry Morabito, and a coaching expertise of Buck Shaw at the legendary Kazar Stadium as their home field. The Los Angeles Dons, headed by an ownership group of Ben Lindheimer, we also know Don Ameche and Bob Hope were on there as well, and the coaching prowess of Dudley DeGroote in the friendly confines of the L.A. Coliseum. The Cleveland Browns, with Arthur McBride as owner and the legendary Paul Brown as the coach at Cleveland's Municipal Stadium. And those Chicago Rockets, led by John Keeshan in the front offices, and the head coach signed was Dick Hanley and a home field of Soldiers Field. Now, the stage was set for history to be made with a great boost of competition at the pro level, so desperately needed. We'll get more into each of these seasons and teams in the futures in individual episodes, so stay tuned. We already have one out on the LA Dons with George Pazica that we recorded back in 2021, so make sure you check that out. And not to be a spoiler for these upcoming posts and podcasts, but when you look at the franchises above, there are only a few names that you can recognize. The AFC lasted only four seasons, but the NFL absorbed three of them. One was not an inaugural AFC member, just a hint, with two still going strong to this day in the NFL. Now look back in coming weeks as we'll focus on the teams of the early pro football and those on the AAFC, and we'll have some very special guests talking about them, expert historians and the like. So make sure you check that out. We appreciate you joining us today for some more great football history as we continue to try to preserve it for future generations and recognize those that did such great things and played the game so hard to make football what it is today. So we hope you join us tomorrow. And until tomorrow, have a great gridiron day. We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, football fans, this is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.